Afternoon, may it please the court. My name is Chip Schoenberg, and my registration number is 41922, and I represent the appellants, Mr. and Mrs. Andriakis. And I think I got it right that time also, so I'm going to probably refer to them as my client just to hedge my bets here a little bit today. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please.
I'll give you a reminder.
I would appreciate that. I'll try to track it, but okay. Cue or signal of some kind would be great. Your Honors, I can lose this case in two ways today. You can find that the Board of Adjustment was right when it upheld the cease and desist order entered against my client's duplex property. That's number one. Number two, you can find that the 106 action was untimely. Neither of those would be the right result here, and let me explain why. As to the cease and desist order, I understand why it was entered in the first place. The property was built about 100 years ago as a single unit dwelling. It's obviously now a duplex, and there's no record of a permit being issued for that change. But when my clients appeared before the board in that September hearing, and the evidence came out that the conversion predated the Denver Zoning Code by 3 years, and the city conceded that point, and the board accepted it, that should have been the end of the case. The conversion predates the code, there's no permit required, therefore there is no violation. Now what happened next, as happens oftentimes at these public hearings, is a neighbor steps up and says, wants to complain about their current tenants living in the duplex, and says, oh, it was so much nicer when it was just the Andriakis living there. And that's where everything changed. Suddenly, my clients are in a hearing about not whether they converted a single unit dwelling into a multiple unit dwelling, but the opposite, whether they converted a duplex back into a single unit dwelling, and then back again into a single unit dwelling, or into a duplex.
Don't we have to address the timeliness issue first?
I kind of get to that.
But the problem is, you might make a very compelling argument on the merits, and mm-hmm. if the timeliness is not where it needs to be, if we don't have jurisdiction, the 106 court, we can't reach that.
I can certainly address that. I'll do that right now, Your Honor. The timeliness issue is a bit trickier. There is no bright line rule for when an administrative decision becomes final. It's not like a district court order where you have a written decision signed by the judge, entered in the clerk's registry. What the cases say is the decision becomes final when it reaches the point of administrative finality and there's nothing left being done with respect to the party's rights. And the only way that you can apply that test is to look at what actually happened here in this saga over a period of hearings. At the September hearing, the Andriakis were surprised with this concept that they had terminated a duplex unwittingly, and based on evidence that the mother-in-law had occupied the lower unit for a period, I think in the 1990s, the board found that they had lost their non-conforming status.
Well, now, let me back up a sec, because at that hearing, the board, before it made findings, did it not give them a choice to say, we're not going to make findings today?
What it did was the city offered to allow them to continue the proceedings in order to apply for a variance.
Let me back you up. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
They could request a continuance and work with their neighbors, find more support for their claim, and appear before the board again for a decision on the validity of the cease and desist order. We're not to variance yet. Or they could request that this case be closed and call for a vote on the cease and desist order. They chose number two. That's to me the heart of the finality question.
Well,
am I right about that?
I would disagree as to the way you're characterizing what happened, because in the transcripts, the city says which would require a variance of the lots. Size and parking, which is not actually before the board, but the city had, I'm sorry, I read the wrong, no, I'm in the right place. So the city would not object to a continuance to allow them to make such an application, and we would repost it as a variance. All that means is that the city can avoid the problem of having to repost the issue by continuing it to a date certain and allowing it continue on the variance issue.
I don't understand what the distinction is. If the court is, or the board here, saying, we'll give you the chance. We can recharacterize this and treat it as a variance, and we'll continue this and we'll go forward. Or, and it's the or part that I think Judge Furman was going to add, and it's my concern too. Or we can close this hearing today, we're going to rule on the cease and desist issue, but without prejudice to you, you end going after a variance. And your clients chose the latter. The problem is, they chose to let the court get a ruling, close this hearing. So in September, they ruled on the cease and desist piece. Then they went forward with the variance, and in November, we have an appeal on the variance issue. I'm not tracking your argument as to why, in those facts, or maybe, and if I misstated it, please tell me.
And that's what what I'm trying to figure out. No,
I understand the concern, and I go back to the fact that, well, for one, my clients were pro se at that hearing.
I understand.
They were instructed that they can come back, they can apply for this variance, and they can come back before the board. And when they did that, they came back for the November hearing.
Well, now, okay, but Judge Gabriel was talking about the or, because were they not told, we don't have to take it to a vote today at the September hearing?
Sure.
And they chose, no, go ahead.
They did make that choice, but I think what's important to remember is that when they got back in front of the board again...
In November.
And the board acknowledged that was a follow-up to the earlier hearing. They now have counsel, and they began making the arguments about the non-conforming status termination, which the board entertained, the city engaged in, and the board entered findings of fact after that November hearing, which discussed those issues. And it said, it incorporated the evidence from the prior hearing, and it found that the non-conforming status indeed had been terminated. And I consider that, under some of the cases that I cited in the brief, Citizens, which discusses the board's ability to reopen a prior proceeding, a prior issue.
You know, okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have two questions, and I don't want to lose track. First question is, were you counsel? Were you the counsel before the board?
I personally was not the counsel, though.
Okay. I want to ask two different questions. One dealing with the board's order following the September hearing, and then second, what counsel's position was at the November hearing.
Okay.
And I'll start with the September board findings. I've got a copy right here. The conclusion: the board concludes that the order is valid and is sustained. Action of the board: the order is found to be valid and sustained.
Mm-hmm.
Finality: that sounds final, like there's nothing left. So we'll start there, and then we'll get to counsel's position in November.
Well, it does sound final. And under the citizens' language, what seemingly is a final decision does not necessarily mean it's a final decision if the administrative agency decides to reopen arguments on that issue, which clearly is what happened.
Well, I'm not going to say clearly yet. I'd like you to address this.
Okay.
What was counsel's position at that November hearing? Did counsel ask the board to revisit its findings?
What counsel did was, and this case has always been about what happened at the September hearing, and counsel said that the need for variance seems a little bit ministerial because there never should be one required in the first place because of the non-conforming status, the legal non-conforming use status that clearly exists under the facts. But counsel asked, and it's in the record, counsel asked that this vehicle, the variance vehicle, be used to administratively recognize what should have been done at the September hearing. So maybe that is not a direct, please reconsider your prior order, but it's clear that that issue was on the table, and that's what was being presented to the board.
But it was really a variance. And the new case number, everything's different now.
It was a new case number, that, and in the findings, it says that it's a follow-up to the prior case number. They are different case numbers. You know, I can't argue that.
But with respect to the cease and desist order and all of the other findings that went into the September hearing and came out as a result of that hearing were incorporated by the board in November, but that's only with respect to the variance.
Well, I would disagree with that. Yeah. They do find that the duplex property lost its non-conforming status. That is a finding in the November findings of fact and conclusions of law. It is on the heels of incorporating the prior evidence and the prior findings of the board, but it's a reaffirmation of what that finding was in light of the fact that council was asking to, it was re-arguing this point, and the board was within its authority to reopen those arguments. And I contend,
excuse me, council, where did it reconsider it? I mean, the fact, I don't disagree with what you're saying, that they may have said, yeah, we ruled on this before. They could have incorporated by reference. I don't see a material distinction. You know, there's one civil lawsuit that decides X, and then there's some unrelated lawsuit down the road, and maybe the court says that's collateral estoppel or res judicata or something. But that doesn't mean it's a reconsideration just because they're talking about what they did before. I'm not seeing what you, and I know you want to say rebuttal time, I'm not seeing what you're
implying. I'm sorry, I was asking you questions.
Okay.
You're down to 3 minutes.
Well, and by the same token, simply because they don't say the words reconsideration and they don't actually reverse their determination, doesn't mean that they weren't entertaining argument. And that's the point of the other line of cases in my brief, which is the revestment doctrine. The board clearly was allowing this to happen. If they, to your Honor's point, if they said, I'm sorry, counsel, we've decided that issue, we're not going to hear argument on it again, move on, please, that might be a different situation, but that's not what happened here. It was clearly before the board was listening to the arguments, they were engaging it, they were incorporating the findings into their new ruling. And I'll point out, because I do want to say a minute or two for rebuttal, that wasn't the end of the saga either, because we came back on a motion to reconsider that ruling, and on December 21st, the board entered another set of findings of fact, and in there, they acknowledged that the non-conforming status was decided in the previous case and reviewed by the parties on November 9th, 2010. By the board's own interpretation of what was going on there, that issue was still at play. And so I think the jurisdictional question, it is a tricky one, I can't deny that, but I think under the kind of fact-intensive interpretation that you have to apply, with respect to when it reaches a point of administrative finality such that nothing else is being done, I think jurisdiction lies.
That said, you have just over 2 minutes.
I will reserve that and rely on my brief with respect to the merits of the cease and desist order.
May it please the court. Your Honors, the city's position is pretty clear here. The first hearing determined that the property was a single unit dwelling.
Counsel, excuse me for interrupting. Are you Mr. Buckey?
I am.
I'm sorry to make sure. Okay, I knew you were Mr. Fried in Ashburn. Sometimes we send you
before. Sorry, Honor. Terry Buckey, City Attorney's Office, 9266. Again, the city's position is very simple. The first hearing was conducted, the city believed properly, but that's really irrelevant as to whether they reached their decision correctly or not, because it was a final decision. Even in the second hearing, they repeated, the board repeatedly said, and the city's position repeatedly was, that first decision was over. That was a decision, and it was treated as a single unit dwelling. The question before the board the second time was, is there a reason to grant a variance for a two-unit dwelling on a lot that was too small under the old zoning code to house a two-unit dwelling? It's not a non-conforming use. Use is conforming because a two-unit dwelling is used by right in the R2 zone district. It's just a question of whether the lot should be granted a variance to allow two-unit dwelling and also three parking spaces.
But I'm sorry to interrupt, but they did address the non-conforming use.
Paragraph right here. Mr. Foster had been recently retained by appellant and not attended the September board hearing, suggested that the property, and then it goes on to address that. Although the conclusion seems to be focused on variance, this is coming out of the November order.
And during the course of the hearing, over and over again, the board said this is not a reconsideration. This is a variance request. It may have inartfully worded their findings, but the bottom line is the board was considering a variance, and that variance was denied. The order of the board specifically says your request for variance is denied. That's what the order is, and that's what they were discussing the whole time.
I understand, but council comes on a day before, whatever it was, doesn't have much time and has to get into the merits, but this is in the written November findings.
You're correct.
So I'm trying to figure out, that doesn't sound real final if they're addressing the merits.
Well, again, the board over and over said they weren't addressing the merits, even though the discussion came up. And the city attorney's office, that is, the city attorney, said, no, we're not discussing the previous case. This is a single unit dwelling. The question is whether or not a variance should be granted. And essentially, yes, the counsel for plaintiff there constantly tried to readdress the issue of single unit dwelling and brought it up several times. And the city, at the same time, constantly said, no, what we're doing is a variance request.
Okay, then what about the motion to reconsider that was just mentioned?
Essentially, the final findings there were that the board simply...
It's not new evidence.
Pardon me?
There's no new evidence.
Right. There's no new evidence, and the board refused to waive its rules and reconsider the case. So they actually didn't reconsider the case, although it took them quite some time to come to the conclusion that they weren't going to reconsider the case. So that was the board's finding. So the first case was simply... The first case actually was, had they improperly converted a single unit dwelling to a duplex? The board agreed that that was the case, so it went back to a single unit dwelling. There are lots of reasons for that, which we don't need to get into, because in the city's position, they didn't appeal that decision within 30 days. The second case was supposed to be simply a variance request. Exactly as the board had told them before that they could request a variance. They didn't guarantee a variance, of course. They said they could request one. They did request one. They came back. Unfortunately, really for the plaintiffs in below, there really wasn't any evidence presented as a hardship before the board. So the board came back and said, you know, no, we're not going to grant a variance. And then the third case was the request for reconsideration. The board said, after considerable discussion, that we're not going to reconsider the case because, in fact, what we have here is we would have to waive our rules. We're not going to do that, and we do not grant reconsideration. Again, the argument was over whether to grant reconsideration, not an actual reconsideration request.
Well, whether to grant a reconsideration of what?
Well, my understanding of what was asked for was a reconsideration of both the first two cases, and they refused. The board refused to do that. So that hearing was actually over whether to grant a reconsideration request, not a reconsideration hearing per se. And essentially, Your Honor, that's the city's position on all three of the cases. There's a lot of other evidence in the record that supports the board's determination on the first hearing. It shows that this property was shown on the assessor's records from as early as 1963 as being a single unit dwelling, that the Henry Nakos did say that they purchased it as a duplex. They also testified under oath that they used it as a single unit dwelling. The board obviously considered that evidence, said, okay, when you converted it back, you needed a permit, which wasn't granted, and now you can't do that without a variance because your lot's too small under the code, and they could go back for a variance. That's the first case. The second case there's essentially no evidence presented to show hardship. The board properly ruled. In the final case, the board simply declined to waive its rules and granted reconsideration.
Can I ask you, Mr. Puck, I know your position is we shouldn't get to the merits, but I have some difficulty understanding the argument here on the merits. It seems to me that there's confusion between a single family and a single unit dwelling. Would you agree that, you know, you could still have a multiple unit dwelling even if it's a family member living in unit two within that? Would you agree with that?
Theoretically correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So is your position here, if I just understood you, is that there were admissions that there was a single unit dwelling regardless of who the other person was?
Correct, Your Honor. The testimony of the Andrianopoulos was they lived as a single family there. Their mother was in the basement. I mean, theoretically, they could have said, yes, we kept the door locked between the two at all times. It was a two-unit dwelling at all times. That's not what they testified to.
All right, so there was more than there was just a family member. There was more there.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
If the panel has no further questions, the city has nothing further.
Just a couple of quick points. To pick up on the last issue, there was not more on who was living where or whether or not there was a conversion. The Andrianopoulos maintained that there were two kitchens. There were two units, two kitchens, two addresses, two electric meters. And under the code, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but under the code, a single unit dwelling is a single structure with one kitchen. So by definition, a single unit dwelling cannot become a multiple unit dwelling, which requires a kitchen in each unit.
Did your clients, or did they not, or one of them, testify, as Mr. Bucky just said, that we were living as a single family unit, a single family under the house? It's just a very specific question. Did they testify to that or not?
I don't recall those specific words. They certainly said our family was living in this on this property.
Okay, thanks.
But I maintain that the distinction between single family and single unit is immaterial. Single family dwelling does not appear in the code anywhere. That's not a use restriction. And then I think a point was made early on in Mr. Bucky's argument that I think what really probably happened here is the Andrianopoulos appeared pro se. Obviously, you know, they weren't familiar with what was the procedural process for all this. And I think the board simply allowed, once they retained counsel, who came back at the November hearing, simply allowed them to rehash those issues. It was only fair under the circumstances.
Well, what about Mr. Bucky's argument that the board said, we're not going to reconsider it? We heard you were trying, and the board said, we're not going to.
Well, what the board did was, and Mr. Bucky admitted this, it took them some time to conclude they weren't going to reconsider, but as I said before, not reversing yourself doesn't mean you didn't reconsider the issues. Reconsideration in the zoning world means we're going to grant you a reconsideration hearing, and you're going to be allowed to prove your case all over again. But they certainly considered the arguments of counsel. And so, and I think it's also important to note that in those proceedings, while there is a city attorney there, the city attorney is there as an advocate. And so, you know, statements like the city refused to reconsider that, that's a little misleading, because the board has their own counsel who is not present for this. And certainly they were engaging in this conversation with the parties.
I see you're out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll just ask the court to reverse the district court and vacate the cease and desist order.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your excellent argument. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.